Welcome to Alfred Hitchcock's Mystery Magazine's podcast series. I'm Linda Landrigan, editor of the magazine, and we're rebooting our podcast after a brief pandemic-related hiatus last year. Alfred Hitchcock's Mystery Magazine publishes original crime and mystery short stories, and in our podcast series, we present readings of stories that have appeared in the magazine. In this episode, Joseph S. Walker reads his story, Etta at the End of the World, from our May-June 2020 issue. At the time of this recording, Etta at the End of the World is a nominee for the prestigious Edgar Award for Best Short Story, presented by the Mystery Writers of America. We look forward to learning the results in April. Joe Walker published his first short story in our pages in 2012. Since then, he's published widely, not only with us and our sister magazine, Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine, but also in numerous anthologies. And now, Etta at the End of the World, read by the author.
After she left the truck stop south of Jacksonville, Etta kept passing signs with names she'd heard all her life from TV and people with the time and money for vacations. Orlando, Tampa, Daytona Beach. It all felt imaginary, but then Florida felt imaginary, like a giant billboard for itself. She passed a lot of palm trees before she accepted that they were real. She couldn't always see the ocean off to her left, but she knew it was there, knew it by the wind and a smell that would never touch Iowa. The sky was big and blue and untouched until the late afternoon, when mountainous clouds started to rise up out of the east. It was like driving into a 3D antidepressant commercial, but she felt an itch at the back of her neck all day. She was cutting herself off. There was only one direction to go now, and if they found her, no place else to run. Of course, running wasn't really the idea. She pulled off in Boca Raton. It was still light out, but she had no chance of making Key West before sunset, and her back wouldn't take another night in the car. She found a run-down motel, not one of the big chains, a few blocks away from the beach, the Sandcastle Lodge. It was a long L, two stories high, sheltered from the main drag by a mini-mall and backed by an abandoned lot full of scrub pine trees. She'd put up with the roaches for the sake of a desk clerk who wouldn't find cash strange. Her room was on the first floor, near the swimming pool tucked into the elbow of the building. A man in the pool was drinking a can of beer and roughhousing with a couple of kids while a plump woman perched on one of the deck chairs made dismayed noises every time one of them went under the water. The only other person near the pool was a teenage girl sleeping on her stomach on a lounger, wearing sunglasses and a red swimsuit that said she thought her body was a little slimmer than it actually was. Etta only glanced at her as she walked by, but the clearly defined bruises on the girl's upper arm jumped at her like they were lit up in neon. She'd seen their match often enough in her own mirror. Four angry purple blemishes, perfectly staking out the shape of a man's hand. The girl's arm was the most real thing she'd seen all day. The room was as bad as she'd expected, but the sheets were clean and the water in the shower hot enough to satisfy. She let it pound onto her aching shoulders for more than half an hour. There'd been a time when she could have driven for four straight days and then partied all night, but 50 was creeping up on her a lot faster than she'd like. She dried herself with the surprisingly adequate towel and fell across the bed, intending to get up in a few minutes and go in search of some kind of dinner. The next thing Etta was aware of was a heavy thud that shook the whole bed. She jerked upright with no idea for a moment of where she was or what was happening. She was nude, sprawled across the bedspread, shivering with cold. She could see the outline of the window behind the drapes, but the room was pitch dark. Heart pounding, she tried to figure out what had woken her. There was a yell from behind the headboard, a deep man's voice. She couldn't make out the words, but the anger was clear. It was cut into by another voice, a female voice, this one pleading and tearful. The second voice got out only a few words before the initial thud happened again, something heavy being thrown up against the wall. She remembered now the imprint of those fingers on that arm. She sat still for the next 10 minutes, listening to what could have been the soundtrack of most of her life. At some point, she noticed the faintly glowing dial of the clock beside the bed. If it was remotely accurate, it was just past 3 a.m. When the noises ended, she still did not move, unable to decide if she could still hear crying from the room next door, or if her mind was filling that in. Eventually, she stood, moving as quietly as possible to the chair where her backpack rested. A t-shirt and shorts were the closest thing she had to sleeping wear, and she pulled them on. Then she stuck her hand back in the bag and felt the grip of the gun. She held it for a long minute, biting her lip, then went back to the bed and crawled under the blankets. She brought the backpack and put it next to her pillow and stared into the darkness, willing the room next door to stay silent. Shooting Tyler had been like a power outage. That instant when everything falls dark and all the hums of a house, the ones you don't hear until they're not there to hear, end. She'd put the barrel against the base of his skull and pulled the trigger, and he'd simply dropped, first face forward onto the table, and then rolling to the floor. He didn't flop or gasp for breath or spit out bitter final words. He didn't even bleed that much. He just stopped. 20 minutes later, Etta was on the interstate outside Davenport, deciding where she would stop to steal a different car. Tyler had taught her how to steal cars. He'd taught her about guns, too. He was a good teacher. That didn't come close to making up for all the things he was bad at. The knock at the door the next morning was so light that Etta wasn't sure she'd heard it. Just dressed after another shower, she was looking out the bathroom window at the wild tangle of trees and vines that ended about 10 feet from the motel, picking out all the plants she'd never seen before. Surely the cops wouldn't knock. She looked through the peephole and wasn't really surprised to see the girl. For a moment, she just stood with her hand on the knob, trying again to project silence, but the girl must have heard something because she knocked again. Etta opened the door a few inches. "Can I help you?" "Yeah," the girl said. She was wearing the sunglasses again, but with jeans and a t-shirt with sleeves long enough to obscure the bruises Etta had seen. "I lost my ID, and I was wondering if I could give you some money to go to the liquor store for me." She pointed at the mini mall. "There's one right at the road there." "Lost your ID," Etta said. "Clerk didn't believe that either, right?" The girl just stared blankly at the door. "It's a little early in the day for a beer buzz," Etta said. She was about to add deer, but bit it off, horrified to be talking like an old woman. "I don't need beer," the girl blurted. She shifted from foot to foot. "Ma'am, it's not for me, honest. Tone, the man I'm with, he wants me to get him a bottle of Jack. I tried yesterday and... look, he's going to be real mad if I don't get it again today." "The man you're with," Etta said, "not your husband." "I ain't married," the girl said forcefully. Etta sighed. She wanted to close the door. She wanted to crawl back on the bed and just wait until somebody found her. Instead, she said, "Is there a place to eat around here?" The girl cocked her head. "There's a restaurant next to the liquor store." Etta nodded. "I'll make you a deal. Come have breakfast with me, and I'll buy the liquor." The restaurant was a diner where everything was coated with a thin layer of grease. All the employees were slender young dark-skinned men who shouted Spanish at each other and seemed perpetually annoyed by the customers wanting attention. The girl left her sunglasses on and kept touching the bottle of booze in its plain brown bag as if to assure herself it was real. She'd insisted on going to buy it before eating, though she had waited outside. Etta ordered eggs and toast and watched the girl work on a stack of pancakes. "So Tone," Etta said carefully, "is he underage too?" "No, ma'am," the girl said. "He's old, in his 30s. This definition of old made Etta decide she'd been ma'amed enough. "Call me Etta," she said. "So why doesn't he buy his own whiskey?" The girl shrugged. "He's real busy." "Too busy to go into a liquor store right outside his door?" He's supposed to be meeting a guy. The girl pushed her food around a little. He's gone all day waiting for him. Etta nodded, as though that made sense. But what does he expect you to do if they're carting? The girl didn't say anything. She stared down at her plate. Let's try this again, Etta said. My name is Etta, and you are... Grace, the girl said quietly. It's nice to meet you, Grace. Etta took a sip from her coffee and waited. Grace finished the pancakes. She put the fork down and took off the sunglasses and looked Etta in the face for the first time. Etta carefully didn't react to the black eye she had known she would see. He gets off on making me do stuff. He told me to shoplift, Grace said. Only I tried that yesterday and they caught me. That's why I waited outside. So then he told me. She looked out the window. He told me to offer to blow the clerk. A waiter came up and slapped the check down on the table, where part of it immediately turned translucent with grease. Grace put her sunglasses back on. Etta dropped a 20 on top of the check. Do you have to stay at the hotel all day? She asked. Grace shook her head. Tone won't be back until late. I thought I'd walk down to the beach, Etta said. She stood up. Join me? They went back to the hotel first so Grace could drop off the bottle and Etta could pay for another night. She got directions to the beach from the clerk, who warned her not to go into the lot behind the motel. Snakes back in there, the man said, in an accent Etta didn't even try to identify. Gators. I think he was putting me on, she told Grace as they walked. The girl shrugged. He told us the same when we checked in, she said. Then a couple of days ago, a gator ate some lady's dog a few blocks from here. Unreal Florida again. Etta tried to imagine scaly monsters strolling around in Davenport and people just accepting it. The beach seemed unreal, too. They sat a few yards above the waterline, Grace propped up against her backpack, watching the waves come in and dead-eyed gulls scurrying down onto the wet sand as the water receded. It was still early in the day on Monday, and there were only a few other people around, mostly just watching the water themselves. Etta thought she could watch it all day. I've never seen the ocean before, she told Grace. I spent my whole life in Iowa. Grace idly traced a line in the sand with a piece of driftwood. Tennessee, she said. I never saw it either before a few days ago. Etta dug her hand into the sand, looking for shells. Souvenirs, she thought, then wondered when she expected to ever enjoy such a thing. She'd always thought of sand as light, but this was heavy, shifting, hard to walk through. The breeze from offshore kept the sun from being too hot, and she was mesmerized by the perpetual motion of the water. Just think, she said. It's been doing that since before we were born, and it'll keep doing it until the end of the world. There was no answer. Grace was sleeping. Etta kicked her shoes off and buried her feet in the warm sand. There was nobody in the world who knew where she was or what she was doing, nobody in the world to tell her to do something different. She dozed some herself and was startled when Grace suddenly spoke. You just here on vacation? Sort of, Etta said. I'm on my way to Key West. Thought I'd make it today, but there's nothing wrong with tomorrow. What's in Key West? The end of the world, Etta said. She dug up a scalloped white shell, no bigger than her thumbnail, but exquisite and perfect. She turned it over in her fingers. It's the last island in this group of island that hangs off the end of Florida. It's where the road ends, where all the roads end. My parents honeymooned there 60 years ago. My mother said until the day she died that if you hadn't seen the sunset in Key West, you hadn't lived a complete life. That's nice, the girl said. Now you're finally going to see it. That's the plan, Etta said. She dug into her backpack and found a rolled pair of socks and carefully put the shell inside them. She tucked the socks back into the bottom of the bag, near the other pair of socks, concealing what had been Tyler's emergency stash of hundreds and twenties. What about you? She asked. You said Tone is here for business? Grace was quiet for so long that Etta was sure she'd fallen asleep again. "Sort of business," she finally said. Etta waited. "His name is Tony," Grace said. "He makes people call him Tone because he thinks it makes him sound tough. Gangster." "And is he a gangster?" "He wants to be." Grace rolled over on her stomach. "He works for my daddy. Now my daddy, he's a gangster. Runs meth labs around the whole state." Etta wanted to ask if Grace should be talking about this, but she bit her tongue. "Daddy wants to branch out," Grace said. "So Tony is down here to buy coke. He set up a deal where a guy is supposed to meet him at a spot a couple miles out on the water, but the guy says he has to wait for a day when he's sure it's clear. So Tony's been going out and waiting for the last 4 days. He's in a pretty bad mood when he gets back to the room." "And he takes it out on you," Etta said. Grace didn't answer, but it wasn't really a question. "Grace, why are you with this guy? What do you see in him?" Grace barked out a laugh. "See in him? Jesus, I hate him." She pushed her fingers roughly into the sand. "Daddy gave me to him. Said I'm a useless shit like my mother, but maybe I can make a grandson to carry on the business." Etta sat silently for several minutes. She thought about patting the girl's shoulder, making comforting noises, but that would have taken something she didn't quite think she had. She thought about all the ways the girl might be playing her, about the fact that she could go back to the hotel right this second and leave. Eventually, she surprised herself by speaking. "You've got better taste than me," she said. "My husband Tyler was like Tone, a crook, somebody who wanted everyone to know how tough he was. My parents tried to warn me about him, but I fell for it. God, I thought he was everything." She stared out at the water. "I thought I must deserve the things he did." She didn't look, but she knew Grace was listening. The waves came in, the waves went out. They'd been doing it long before Etta was born. They'd be doing it long after she was gone. Etta stood up. "I passed a library yesterday," she said. Grace looked up at her, and Etta held out a hand to help her up. "Come on, I want to show you something." The library, a couple of blocks off the beach, was a low-slung stucco building with pastel awnings and red terracotta tiles on the roof. Etta couldn't help but wish it were just a plain old concrete block. Jesus, Florida, she thought, we get it already. The few people inside were dressed as casually as those they'd seen on the beach. Etta found the computer stations and chose one in a private corner. Grace stood next to her, hip cocked against the desk, looking around from behind her pitch-dark shades. Etta had the feeling she didn't spend much time in libraries. It took her only a few minutes to find the article she was looking for in the online version of the Quad City Times. "Here," she said. She stood up and steered Grace into the chair. "Read this." Grace took off the sunglasses and began scanning the article. After a few seconds, her eyes opened wide. Etta didn't need to look. She'd read it at another library in Georgia 2 days ago. "Local man Tyler Hessian found dead in his home of a single gunshot wound. Troubled history. Grand theft, domestic abuse. Wife, Etta, missing and being actively sought by police as a person of interest. If you have any information..." "Holy shit," Grace hissed. She looked up at Etta. "Did you do that?" "Yeah," Etta said. She pulled over another chair and perched on the edge, leaning forward. "Tell me something. Does Tone shower when he comes back at night?" That night, Etta sat in the chair in her room. She'd cleaned and reloaded the gun, every step reminding her of Tyler's impatient lectures, his warnings about a gun that jams at the moment when you need it, as though he'd ever done anything with a gun other than wave it around. She put the gun on the nightstand and forced herself to leave it alone. She turned on the TV with the volume all the way down so she'd have something to look at. She nibbled on cookies and drank soda to stay alert. A hospital show, lots of very earnest, very serious young men and women in scrubs, frowning at helpless-looking people in beds. After a while, they were replaced by the local news. From what she could tell without any sound, it was exactly the same as the local news in Iowa. She'd come here because Florida felt like the end of the world, but there were people who lived here every day. They'd probably find a few miles of unbroken cornfields as bizarre as Etta had found the beach. The talk show host who came on after the news was on his second guest when Etta heard a door open and the mumble of voices through the wall behind her. She turned off the TV and listened. She still couldn't make out words, but it didn't sound like he was hitting her this time, though he still sounded angry. Probably pleased to have his jack. She listened to the two voices rising and falling, the indistinct movements around the room. It was hard to be sure what was happening. Was that Tone throwing himself onto the bed? Grace moving around to get him a drink? What was she going to do if Tone decided not to shower tonight? Grace had said he always did, that he couldn't stand sleeping coated in the sweat and sunscreen of a long day out on the water. But now, sitting alone in her room, Etta didn't think that sounded like much to base a plan on. Maybe they should have gone with their first idea, having Etta hide under the bed, but she hadn't been able to stand the idea of being under there in God knows what filth for God knows how long. The bed springs in the next room creaked again. Tone said something that had a nasty edge to it and laughed loudly. Then footsteps, then a moment of silence, and then a pipe somewhere creaked to life, and three soft but distinct knocks came against the wall. So this was it. Etta seemed to watch herself from a distance as she picked up the gun with her right hand and covered it with a folded towel held in her left. Moving quickly, she went out the door and turned and came to the door of the next room, which was cracked open. She pushed through. Grace was on the other side, her eyes wide. She closed the door behind Etta and put the chain on, just as they'd rehearsed, and Etta dropped the towel and walked to the bathroom, seeing nothing but what was immediately in front of her. The shower curtain was not quite closed. She could see Tone, facing away from the door, scrubbing at his crotch. He was a small man, shorter than Etta, but his frame was wiry and muscular. He had more body hair than any man she'd ever seen. He must have heard something, or caught a glimpse of something, because he started to turn and raise his hand, and the shot Etta had intended for the back of his head, the same place she'd shot Tyler, instead hit the corner of his jaw. His head jerked back and his eyes widened, and she shot him two more times, both in the head, and now he dropped and she saw the tile behind him spattered with blood. Tyler always had said she was a good shot. She kept the gun raised and watched him not moving. There was quite a lot of blood, but the running shower was swirling most of it away down the drain. She replayed the three shots in her head and thought about the people in adjoining rooms, imagined them jerking awake or suddenly looking up from the TV, wondering about the bangs. They'd sit still, like she had after the thud last night, waiting to see what else would happen, convincing themselves that it was a car or something equally meaningless, nothing they needed to be involved with. After she had counted off 5 minutes in her head and heard no sirens, she lowered the gun to her side. There was no new blood coming from Tone, and the one eye he had left was milky and unfocused. She stepped out the bathroom door. Grace was sitting cross-legged on the bed, clutching a pillow to her chest and shaking. "It's over," Etta said. "Go get the stuff." Grace nodded and jumped from the bed and ran outside. In a minute she was back with the plastic bags holding the supplies they'd bought this afternoon. Cleaning solution, paper towels, plastic bags, duct tape, flashlight, and, just because Etta had damn well wanted some, Oreos. "You don't have to look," Etta said. Grace shook her head. "I didn't have the balls to do it," she said. "Least I can do is look at it." Etta stepped aside and Grace dropped the bags on the bed and walked into the bathroom. Etta let her take her moment, let her make it whatever she needed to be, as she ran through a list of everything that needed to be done. Clean up the bathroom. Use the duct tape and plastic bags to cover any part of Tone that might leave a blood trail. In a few hours, when it was the deadest part of the night, shove his body through the bathroom window, then go around the building and move him as far as they dared into the wooded lot. If there were gators, they were in for a nice breakfast. Then, hopefully just before dawn, take off. They would leave Etta's stolen car in the parking lot with the keys in it. Tone's Mustang would be a safe ride for a while. It wasn't like Grace's father was going to file a missing persons report on his drug mule. Grace came out of the bathroom. For the first time since Etta had met her, she looked completely composed. "Thank you," she said. "Let's get started." The sunset in Key West was everything Etta's mother had promised. Fantastic bands of pink and orange remaking the sky continuously, the colors edging into the impossibly vibrant. Seemingly just to keep living up to the postcards, Florida was even kind enough to provide a couple of magnificent sailboats perfectly silhouetted against the spectacular sky. Etta couldn't even bring herself to resent it. She and Grace watched from a restaurant on a boardwalk thronged with tourists and street performers. They seemed to be the only people actually watching the sky as opposed to filming it on their phones. Etta had left hers in Iowa, and Tone had never allowed Grace to have one. It was hard to feel that they were missing anything. Between Tyler's stash and Tone's unspent Coke money, they could always get a burner phone if they needed to, or a dozen. When the sky was finally dark, she lifted her margarita glass and clinked it against Grace's diet soda. "I have to say that was worth the trip," she said. "It was fantastic," Grace said. She was still looking out over the water, but now she turned to look at Etta. "So what were you going to do after the sunset?" "I hadn't decided," Etta said. She leaned back in her chair. "I was either going to blow my brains out on the beach or walk into the water and wait to drown." Grace looked shocked. "You wanted to die?" Etta shrugged. "I thought that's what you came to the end of the world to do." "And now?" "Why rush?" Etta said. "It'll happen sooner or later. Might as well go for later. Why, do you have any plans?" Grace looked down at the table. "I thought maybe we could go see my daddy." Etta smiled and drained the last of her drink and set the glass down. "Why the hell not?" she said.
That was Joseph S. Walker reading his story, Etta at the End of the World, from the May-June 2020 issue of Alfred Hitchcock's Mystery Magazine. If you've enjoyed listening to this story, you'll find many others from the magazine at our website, alfredhitchcockmysterymagazine.com. Alfred Hitchcock's Mystery Magazine is published by Dell Magazines and Penny Publications. You can find the magazine at your newsstand. Digital editions are available at all major e-tailers. This podcast was produced with the help of our editorial assistant, Ray Purdom, and our managing editor, Jackie Sherbo. I'm Linda Landrigan, editor of the magazine. Thanks for listening.